You're listening to The Ancient Tradition, a Wonk Media production. Music provided by Joseph McDade. Here's your host, Dr. Jack Logan.
Welcome to The Ancient Tradition. I'm your host, Jack Logan. So fun to have you with me today. I woke up this morning. It's Friday. I have the entire day off because the university where I teach is on spring break. So I thought, what do I feel like doing today? What do I want to do? And I'm like, I want to talk about the epistle to the Hebrews. That's what I feel like doing. So I thought, hey, why not just open it up and just do an unscripted, quick little bonus episode for the ancient tradition listeners out there. So that's what we're going to do today. I don't have a single note next to me. I don't have a single script around me. Moses and Enoch, they did not have the gift of speech. And so you can only work with what God has given you. This is what he's given me. So this is what we're going to do today. We're going to just try and wing it, I guess is what you would call it. There's so much fabulous stuff in the book of Hebrews that I wanted to talk about it outside of kind of a formal episode on the podcast. This one, I'll probably leave it here for about a week, and then I'll move it over to our sister podcast, The Ancient Tradition Audio Writ, where you can find it there. But just for fun for today, this is what we're going to try and do. So I'm going to read verse by verse, and after each verse, we'll talk about some of the interesting things that we find in there in relation to the things that we've talked about on the podcast. These are really fabulous proof texts for many of the things that we've been discussing on the podcast. So I wanted to point them out so that you would be aware of them and see them. We have talked about a few of them, but you will see a few more in here as well. So let's start with verse 1. Verse 1 reads, God, who at sundry times and in diverse manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets. I just love how much they pack doctrinally into one little verse here. There's so much we could talk about, but especially relevant to the Ancient Tradition podcast is the underlying premise that God revealed an ancient religious tradition to the people in the beginning, in the very beginning. And basically that's what we have here in this verse. It's telling us that God is a God of revelation, that he revealed his doctrines in various times and in various places through the fathers and the prophets. So we get a clear description here of God as a God of revelation, that he does this. He shares his doctrine with the people. In verse 2, it says, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. Okay, there's tons packed in here. So the first part is he's saying, hey, you know, in times past, God's revealed it to the fathers and the prophets, but in these days today, he is now revealing his doctrines to us by his Son. They come through the Son, Christ the Son. So we have another important doctrinal point that's being implied here, and that is that God the Father and Christ the Son are two separate beings. It says right here that God the Father is speaking to the people now through his Son, Christ the Son. So I know that people don't love to hear that, but that's basically what we're going to see all over in the book of Hebrews. It's there time and again. It says here, now this whole chapter here is all about Christ the Son, and we're going to learn all about who he is and some really important things about him. So keep that in mind as we kind of go through this. But it says here that he, Christ the Son, is appointed heir of all things. Now, why is he the heir? Well, on the podcast, we know why he's the heir. He's the heir because he successfully conquered the Leviathan. He was the one that did that. And so because of that, he is now the rightful heir of everything that the Father, God the Father, has. And so it's clear right here, Paul is telling the Hebrews, hey, he is appointed heir of all things. And then after that, it's really amazing what it says. In the last, very last line of verse 2, it says, by whom also he made the worlds. So we're seeing that same pattern we saw all over in the ancient Near East, where you have the Son, the beloved Son, who battles against the Son who desires to usurp God the Father's throne, successfully doing so, and then he's made the heir to everything that God the Father has. And we see that. And then when he's made the heir, he's given a kingdom. And so then he can make worlds. And that's exactly the pattern that we're seeing here in verse 2, that now we're told that Christ the Son made the worlds. And yes, it is in plural. Verse 3, we're going to get a description here of what Christ the Son looks like. A description of what he appears to us like. It says, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. Again, there's like so much packed in here. Okay, so look, the very first description that we get of Christ the Son here is that he has the brightness and glory of God the Father. This is really fascinating. In just our, two episodes ago, episode 29, who is God? A glorious being of ineffable light. So we know God the Father is a glorious being of just really astonishing ineffable light. And Paul is telling us, guess what? Christ the Son, his brightness and his glory matches. It's the express image of God the Father. So we've got a problem doctrinally here if we take this verse for its word, because this is basically telling us we have God the Father, who is a glorious being. He is a God. He is divine. And then you have Christ the Son, who is the same. He has the same brightness and glory as the Father. So we have two divine beings here, a plurality of gods. In a religion that's widely perceived to be a monotheistic religion, here, right in verse 3, it's clear that we're talking about two separate beings of glory. Then we read this really, this is the middle part of verse 3. It says, upholding all things by the word of his power. And I absolutely love the fact that Paul uses the verb upholding. Because if you remember back in one of our previous episodes, let's see, episode number 28, who is God? Lord of Ma'at, King of Tzedek. If you remember in that episode, we talked about in ancient Egypt that the king, the pharaoh, in order to be an effective pharaoh, he had to uphold Ma'at. Uphold Ma'at. He has to uphold tzedek or righteousness. He's got to do this if he's going to have any kind of ability to bring about fertility and wellness to the kingdom. It has to be built on Ma'at. So here we're getting kind of the same idea that Christ the Son upholds all things. So he's upholding this. We get that implication of Ma'at by the word of his power. Now, just in our very last episode, in episode 30, the grand primordial singularity, we touched on this. The word that Christ used to bring about the creation was his name. This is not surprising because we learned in the ancient Near East that the names that people are given tried to be a perfect reflection of the essence of who they were. So somebody who perfectly upheld rightness, then their name would reflect that they were one who perfectly upheld rightness. So you could command the elements to form a world just by your name, because that name reflected that you by right had a right to command the elements to form a world, because you were one who perfectly upheld rightness. That's pretty astounding. So when it says here in verse 3, and upholding all things by the word of his power, I mean, it just encapsulates everything we've been talking about on the podcast for the last 6 months, that it's done by way of rightness. That is what gives you the power and the authority to bring about order in the cosmos. And this is completely implied. The same thing is exactly how Christ the Son is bringing about the worlds, and how come he has the legitimate authority to do that. And then the last part of this is pretty interesting. It says, after he's done this, he sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. So the word majesty here clearly has royal implications. So Christ goes up into the heavens and he sits down next to God, his Father, on the throne. I don't know if there's two thrones or one big throne. I don't know how it all works. But basically what we have here is it implies two thrones. You've got God the Father on one throne, and on his right, you've got another throne with Christ the Son on the throne. So we have a heavenly kingship kind of family hierarchy that we're establishing here in verse 3. Let's go on to verse 4. Being made so much better. Now we're talking about Christ the Son again. Being made so much better than the angels, as he hath by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. This is pretty intriguing. This basically is telling us that there is some sort of social or spiritual or holiness hierarchy in the heavens. Because we're told right here that Christ the Son was made so much better than the angels. And then listen to what it says. And this is because as he hath by inheritance obtained a more excellent name. This is astounding that it's even in the scriptures to me. Basically, verse 4 is telling us that Christ the Son inherited an excellent name. And why do we know that he did this? We know that the name that he inherited is because he fully conquered the Leviathan. So the excellent name that he obtained is a name that reflects just that, that he is a conqueror. Remember in the Book of the Dead, the papyrus of Annie? Annie is so incredibly proud of the fact that he has triumphed over the dragon, and that is his epitaph. He says, I am Osiris Annie, the triumphant. And if you didn't get it, I'm the triumphant one. I have triumphed. That's part of his name. That's part of his epitaph. And so here in verse 4, we're getting that. As he hath by inheritance, so this is Christ the Son, obtained a more excellent name than they. Well, who's they? They here is clearly the angels. Angels, we definitely perceive them as being glorious beings of light, that there is a glory to angels. But this verse is suggesting that there is variations in glory and that it has to do with the name. So Christ has obtained a more excellent name by inheritance, because he is a rightful heir, than the angels. So we are to suppose then here that the angels have lesser names because they did not fully conquer the dragon, maybe at some other level, lesser level. Okay, verse 5. For unto which of the angels said he at any time, Thou art my son, this day I have begotten thee. And again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. Okay, we have some really wonderful doctrine that's going on in this verse. And we haven't had a chance to touch on it yet in the regular podcast. We are definitely going to, because this is actually a critical, critical doctrine in it. But I'm going to give you a little bit of a heads up to what this doctrine is. So here we have, at what time did God the Father ever say to the angels, hey, you are my sons? He's basically saying that he didn't do that. The angels, he didn't say to the angels, you're my sons. I've begotten thee. So what this implies is that to be called a son of the high God, to be called a son of God the Father, is basically equivalent to being called a dragon slayer. It's equivalent to being called one who has triumphed over the dragon. So we're left to suggest that the angels didn't fully conquer the dragon. They just did on some certain level. So let me reread this so you're not confused. So in verse 5, it says, For unto which of the angels said he at any time, Thou art my son, this day I have begotten thee. And again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. So to be called a son seems to be here an epitaph, just like Annie saying, I am triumphant. To be a son, to be declared a son, and this is with a capital S, so this is like a name. This is like an epitaph. This is a name. It seems to be equivalent to what I just said before, to one who has triumphed, to be an heir. And I could get into all kinds of the heirship stuff, because that's what an heir is. The heir is the son. So you get heir and son are equivalent with each other. Triumphant, dragon slayer, heir and son, they're all the same. And he says, I have begotten thee. I don't know if this is talking about a physical begotten. I think here we're really talking, well, I mean, I shouldn't say. This could be a physical birth. He physically gave birth. It could be a spiritual birth. To begotten is spiritual. Now, you're going to learn later on in the podcast that it's a large part is a spiritual rebirth. but I'll save the interpretation on this for later. But the notion of to be gotten in a spiritual sense then suggests that those who triumph over the dragon and are made sons then become official parts of God's family. They are official royal sons who then can go on, or royal daughters can go on to be kings and queens and have their own kingdoms. Okay, so that's kind of what we've got going on here in verse 5, that we're being told about Christ the Son. Just the last line of verse 5 again, let me read that to you. And again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son, capital S-O-N. So we've got that epitaph there. There's a lot there, and we'll develop this more in the podcast. Verse 6, and again, when he bringeth in the first begotten into the world, he saith, and let all the angels of God worship him. So the first begotten, we're getting into some of the church of the firstborn, which is part, to be born first is to be an heir. We know in ancient Israel that it was the firstborn son who was the heir of all the father had. So this is another epitaph in a way that's saying to be the firstborn, the first begotten, is to be an heir. And it's clearly reference to Christ the Son here. But the last line of verse 6 is pretty interesting. And it says, and let all the angels of God worship him. So this again comes back to that spiritual or celestial hierarchy that we're talking about. So those who have not fully conquered the dragon, that they partially did or to a level, then are subservient and they become servants to those who have. They work in behalf of those who have conquered the dragon. So then they will worship the heir, who is Christ the Son. Verse 7, and of the angels he saith, who maketh his angels spirits and his ministers a flame of fire. I like this. They minister to him. So these are angels that minister to Christ the Son. But in verse 7, we clearly get the doctrine that they do have a level of glory to them. And his ministers a flame of fire. And then verse 8, I love verse 8. This brings together so much of what we've talked about on the podcast. Verse 8, but unto the Son he saith, thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness is the scepter of thy kingdom. Okay, there's loads of heavenly kingship theology going on here in this verse. Of course, in this whole first chapter. But basically, it's pretty explicit here in verse 8. We're talking about heavenly kingship. So God the Father says to his Son, Christ the Son, he says, thy throne. So God the Father is giving Christ the Son a throne. And he's telling him that his throne is forever and ever, which of course we know is true because of what we learned in our previous episode when we were talking about the Holy of Holies being an eternal place. It's atemporal. There is no time there. So it's not bound by time. So to reign on a throne in the center of all things, on the right hand of God the Father, he is in an atemporal place, his throne is a throne that goes on forever and ever. And then the second part of this verse 8, it says, a scepter of righteousness. So Christ the Son holds in his hand a scepter. Now, we already talked about how the tree of life represents God the Father and also symbolically Christ the Son in the Holy of Holies. And so a branch of the tree is held in Christ the Son's hand. And we can read lots of scriptures in the biblical canon that support this idea that Christ is acting under the will of his Father, God the Father. And so he holds in his hand a branch of the tree that symbolically represents that he is working under the power and authority of God the Father. But what kind of scepter is it? I love this. In verse 8, it says it's a scepter of righteousness. It's a scepter of Zedek, a scepter of Ma'at. So this scepter represents that he is a king who operates completely complicit with the demands of rightness. That's what he is. He reigns with a scepter of Zedek or Ma'at in his hand. And then it says, a scepter of righteousness is the scepter of thy kingdom. We'll get into this a little more in the upcoming episodes on the podcast. But basically then, his entire kingdom is built on Ma'at or Tzedek. He reigns. His whole entire kingdom is governed by rightness. I love it. Verse 9, thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. Okay, this is fabulous. You see how excited I'm getting? I just love Hebrews. I think it's so wonderful. But where have we heard this before? Now remember, we're talking about Christ the Son. So this is a description of Christ the Son. Thou hast loved righteousness. We have heard this phrase before on the podcast. Where have we heard this? We talked about this in episode number 28. Who is God? Lord of Ma'at, King of Tzedek. Basically, what we're talking about here is, if you remember in ancient Egypt, that we read in many of the pyramid texts and in the Book of the Dead and several of the other papyri that we studied, that the king took on an epitaph of Lord of Ma'at or Lover of Ma'at. He didn't just uphold righteousness. The Pharaoh loved righteousness. And this is exactly the description that we get of Christ the Son here by Paul in the Book of Hebrews. It's crazy. Thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. That's who Christ the Son is, one who loves tzedek. And so because of that, what did God the Father do? And this is the second half. There's so much doctrine in here. Even thy God hath, God the Father, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. So God the Father then, because he lives and loves righteousness, which he clearly implies he's a dragon slayer, that he's conquered the dragon, he then there anointed Christ with the oil of gladness. He anointed, God the Father anointed Christ a king. This is exactly what we saw in the Enuma Elish with Marduk and in many of the other ones with Baal, where we saw this exact pattern that once they conquered the dragon, they are anointed with the myrrh oil, the oil of gladness, the oil that has a fragrance to it, and they are anointed heavenly kings. So we're told right here in verse 9 that Christ is anointed a heavenly king by whom? By God the Father. Christ did not self-anoint. He did not self-declare him a king, a heavenly king. It says right here in verse 9, that is not what happened. In verse 9, it says right here that God, even thy God, hath anointed thee with the oil of gladness above thy fellows. It's right there. You just got to read. Now, the last part of that is that he's anointed above his fellows. And I think that refers again back to these ministering angels and those who have not fully conquered the dragon, that they are not fully anointed to become heavenly kings. They aren't. You would have to be full conquerors of the dragon to be made a heavenly king. So he's above the fellows because he did fully conquer the dragon. And thus, the others, all they can offer up is to minister to him. All right, in verse 10, and thou, Lord, in the beginning, hast laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the works of thine hands. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this verse because this is actually the topic of our next podcast episode. So I'll save some of this. But basically, it says right here that Christ the Son, then, he builds the world. He forms the world. And he does this by laying the foundation first. And we're going to talk all about that in our next episode. Super neat stuff. Okay, verse 11. They shall perish, but thou remainest, and they all shall wax old as doth the garment. I'm going to read verse 12 too. And as a vesture shalt thou fold them up, and they shall be changed. But thou art the same, and thy years shall not fail. I'm not exactly sure on this. I haven't studied this that much, but I think what this is saying is that everyone's going to die, but Christ will not. And because of that, he will be able to bring about healing and order and restore order to the physical bodies, restore incorruption to corruption because of his sacrifice. I think that's what that's saying, but I would have to study a little bit more. Verse 13, but to which the angels said he at any time, sit at my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. So in verse 13 here, it's saying, hey, when did Christ ever say to the angels, come and sit on my right side? He didn't, because they were not full conquerors of the dragon. So it's basically saying he's not going to make the angels heavenly kings. In verse 14, are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for them who shall be heirs of salvation? That's really interesting. So what do ministering angels do? Those who have not fully conquered the dragon, they operate under the authority of Christ the Son, who, it looks from verse 14, like he dispatches them to help others who will be heirs of salvation. So they work in his behalf to help bring about the salvation of those who are still working towards it. Well, that wraps up Hebrews chapter 1. Maybe this will give you something to think about, something to ponder a little bit. We'll come back and maybe try this again with chapter 2, because there's just more and more fabulous stuff in chapter 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. There's really great stuff here, but that was 14 verses. Did you see how much doctrine is packed in to 14 little verses? I mean, when you look at the page, it's like barely even a full page, if even. And the doctrine in there is just unbelievable. It's fantastic. What I find so amazing here in this, the epistle to the Hebrews, is just how much of what we just read, how much of the really rich theology that we just learned from Paul is found all over in the ancient Near East, among the ancient Mesopotamians, among the ancient Egyptians, amongst the Canaanites. It's just astounding. There's so much evidence that there was an ancient tradition that was taught originally that continues to flow down to us. It's a beautiful theology. I hope you've enjoyed that. If you're enjoying the program, if you enjoy this podcast, if you're learning a lot that you didn't know, or it's expanding knowledge that you already have, I encourage you to just take a minute right now at the close of this to like go and leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. It's like super simple to do. You just scroll down to the bottom and you can click on the stars there. You can leave a full review. I encourage you to do that so that others can find the program. In the words of William Shakespeare, knowledge is the wing wherewith we fly to heaven. I hope you have a fabulous week, and I'll see you in a week with our next episode of The Ancient Tradition. I'm Jack Logan.
You've been listening to The Ancient Tradition, a Wonk Media production.